Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, brought to you by TrustMap for Security Performance Management. Your host is Josh Bruning, Cybersecurity Solutions Engineer with TrustMap. Today, he talks with Jeff Wheatman, Cybersecurity Evangelist at BlackKite. Now, let's get to it.
What does the industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today?
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it, keep it running, it will blow up.
But you also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats.
My guest today has extensive experience engaging with executive leaders and board members. He has prepared security and risk leaders to present before a board. He has reviewed and advised on upwards of 500 board presentations and briefed 60 plus boards of directors to understand their role in managing cyber risk. Today, let's welcome the one and only Jeff Wheatman.
Josh, it's a pleasure to see you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. Always good to talk to you. And I know we're in for a treat today. The first time I talked to Adam Stone, he said, you've got to meet Jeff Wheatman. He is unlike any other character you're going to meet in cybersecurity and risk. And I was looking forward to this day. I've been looking forward to it for a long time. So welcome. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Adam gave me a lot to live up to as a character. We had this morning, we do sales pipeline calls every week. So this morning, I was riding on my Peloton. So I had my iPad and I was unmuted. And I said, I can't really talk unmuted. And our CRO is like, oh my God, Jeffrey's not going to talk. And I was like, I'm hurt. I'm offended.
Yeah, I think it's a treat every time you talk. I would regret to say, you know, I'm embarrassed to say this. I see you all the time at the conferences. And I have never seen one of your presentations. Can you give us a little bit of background on what you talk about?
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of my sort of pedigree because I think that'll be helpful to users. So currently, I work for a company called BlackKite. I have an evangelist role. Essentially, my job is to think about things, and then I get to go talk about the things I think about. And it's actually a really, really fun job. Prior to that, I spent 15 years working at Gartner. And at Gartner, I was on a team that was internally called the FMC team. FMC stands for Fluffy Management Stuff. And we talked about things like program development, things like strategic planning, communication. You mentioned going in front of boards. I mean, I've reviewed hundreds and hundreds of board presentations. I talk about metrics. I talk about third-party risk, which I know is something near and dear to what you guys do. TrustMap. I mean, to be quite frank, if you give me 30 minutes and tell me what you want me to talk about, I'll figure something out. And I love it. It's if I did nothing but talk, get on stage, speak to people like you and your audience, that would be really exciting. I know today we're talking about telling stories and communicating. And one of the interesting things is later today, I'm actually doing a virtual presentation for an ISSA chapter out of New Jersey. And the topic is on storytelling. It's a deck that I actually did at the event you and I first met. And, you know, it's a topic I've been talking about for a really long time. And I decided this morning that I was going to redo the entire deck today. So I basically spent like 3 hours on Midjourney. I replaced all my images and updated all of my talk tracks. So your audience is going to get the benefit of all of that new stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, we've got more than 30 minutes today. Fortunately, we've got about 45 minutes. And, you know, if the conversation wants to keep going, always happy to have you back. And maybe, I don't know if anybody's doing any long form conversations in cybersecurity. Are you aware of anybody who's doing that?
You know, I mean, I do a podcast as well, and we try to make it that. I feel like these days in particular, I think a lot of people have shorter attention spans. And I don't mean that in a negative way. There are so many things competing for our attention all the time. And I just think people don't necessarily have the opportunity to set aside time for that. But I agree with you. I think there's real value and real benefit to be able to go deeper and really kind of pull and pluck at the threads. And I mm-hmm. feel like we don't get enough of that. Everything is so, all right, you got 5 minutes here and 10 minutes here. We got to do this. We got to do this. We got to pull this thing together. And I think it's to our detriment to a certain extent.
Yeah, Joe Rogan's taken up all the bandwidth on the long-form conversations. And so everybody, that's one thing. Everybody can't do a long-form conversations. For the rest of us, we've got to stick to clips and sound bites. But today, we are indeed talking about storytelling in cybersecurity. And storytelling in cybersecurity has become popular in recent years. I've even seen CISOs draw from the hero's journey to help guide storytelling structure. But I would like to zoom out today and, according to the hero's journey, figure out what various characters of the story, what characters in the organization mesh with the characters or the archetypes in the hero's journey, beginning with the CISO. And Jeff, we all know that the CISO is the hero of the story, right?
No. I love this.
What are you talking about, Jeff?
So I've been doing storytelling stuff for a long time. I refer to myself mm-hmm. as an OG in storytelling because I was mm-hmm. doing it when it was not really a common thing. Now everyone has it in their LinkedIn profile. And I think that's great because I think it's an underutilized skill. Mm-hmm. The hero's journey, I think, is a really, really interesting, sort of mechanism for constructing stories. And you use the word archetype, and I love that concept. And I don't think it's something that a lot of people are super familiar with. You know, an archetype, for those of you that may not be familiar with the concept, it's basically a persona. It's a clearly defined, sort of containerized character type in stories, right? So everybody loves movies. So here's a great example, right? You have the funny roommate, right? That's an archetype. You have the sarcastic friend. That's an archetype. You have the screw up in the group. That's an archetype. And the way you know it's an archetype is because within 10 seconds of seeing someone, you already know what role they're going to play in the story. And the hero's journey, I think, is a great example. You know, it was not created, but it was identified by a gentleman by the name of Joseph Campbell. And Joseph Campbell was a studier of mythology. And he noticed that a lot of mythological stories, especially the really, really old ones, all followed this structure. And I'm going to get to your question because I think it's important, but I want to make sure everyone really understands.
I think this setup is good.
So essentially, the hero's journey, quite simply, is something bad happens in the hero's village, and the hero is dragged kicking and screaming to go and solve the problem. So whether it's a monster, whether it's a dragon, whether it's an evil warlord, for those of you that are close to my age, you probably remember the TV show A-Team. Well, in the A-Team, every single episode, there was this person who mm-hmm. destroyed a village or whatever. Well, the hero then, after he gets pulled into this, goes out and he goes after the bad actor, and he frequently is defeated and he's embarrassed to go back home. So he goes and he hides out. He goes to the mountains, he goes to the desert, he goes to the forest or whatever. And while he or she are there, they run into the wise hermit, the magician, the wizard, who provides the hero with a magic weapon, a magic spell, some mechanism. The hero then goes back after the bad actor, and with the help of what he got and what he learned from the enabler, he is victorious and he goes home and he is a hero. And you can think about the one I always talk about is Beowulf, right? Beowulf is a great example of the hero's journey. But we see it all the time, right? In action movie, So I'm a big John Wick fan, and I figure it's been out a couple months. So if you haven't seen it, I feel bad at spoiling. But he's going after the Marquis, right? And he gets close, and then he has the fight on the stairs, and it's one of the greatest fights of all time. And he gets his butt handed to him, and then Mr. Nobody comes in and helps him. And then he is victorious. So mm-hmm. back to your question, I think a lot of security leaders, security executives, risk folks, they think they're the hero of the story. And as such, they end up in a position where they can't defeat the bad actor. In reality, the CISO is the wise, the wizard, the person with the magic weapon. Oh. The hero of the story is the CEO or the CFO or the COO or the senior vice president of supply chain or whatever. We as security people are not the hero of the story. We are the enabler. We are the helper. We are the provider of wisdom and magic weapons. And maybe the magic weapons is a tool. Maybe it's a process. Maybe it's changing the structure. Maybe it's creating a policy. But at the end of the day, that is the way we need to start to think about this. I think that is maybe one of the biggest reasons why CISOs struggle sometimes. They feel like as the hero of the story, they need to be perfect. And they feel like they need to protect the organization from itself because that's really what the hero's job is. But mm-hmm. in fact, we are an enabler. We help the hero achieve his or her objectives with the minimum level of exposure or an acceptable level of exposure. And I think it's a great story. And I think we can do a lot of really, really cool things around it. And some of the stories we tell are much simpler. Some of them are more complicated, but we need to always keep in mind what archetype we are fulfilling. And the archetype of the CISO is not the hero. Now, to be fair, there may be a story lower down where maybe the CISO is the hero of their story and maybe their engineer, or mm-hmm. maybe it's somebody like you or Adam, or maybe it's somebody like me, enables them to be more successful and to be, you know, the hero of their story. At the end of the day, I guess everybody gets to be a hero at some level. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to think I'm a hero for my wife and my kids as an example, but mm-hmm. I think we need to step away, I think, from the story and focus on what it is we're actually trying to accomplish. And I'll give you a quick example. So I mentioned I was redoing my deck. Well, I have a slide in there that talks about story outlines. So I'm using Midjourney, and I type in prompts like an outline. I don't get anything good back. I type in a line drawing of a man and woman running from zombies just to get something. And I tried 8 or 9 prompts, and I could not get an image that gave me what I wanted to have. So what does that tell you? I'm not doing a good enough job articulating what it is I'm trying to accomplish. Because all the other images I put in, all the other prompts, you know, maybe 2 or 3, this one I tried 6 or 7. I did not get where I needed to be. So I'm gonna keep revisiting it because I will not be defeated by Midjourney. But I think it's super important to make sure we understand what's the point of the story, what's the end game, what lesson are we trying to get out there, what behavior are we trying to change, what piece of information are we trying to share. And you know, it's funny because where we met at Secure 360 in Minneapolis, so I did this presentation on storytelling, and I'm going to tell you a secret. I am actually an introvert. I would prefer to sit on my couch with my wife, holding hands, watching TV.
I never would have thought
that. But I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I am a character. I play a character. I play a character on stage. I play a character at work. I mean, I guess we all play characters. But mm-hmm. I share that because I think a lot of people say, oh, I could never do what he does. I could never be that boisterous and that energetic. But everybody can. It's just a matter of understanding we're all characters in mm-hmm. our lives, in our jobs. And I think it's really, really important to understand that, because some people are not comfortable in front of audiences. Some people are not comfortable talking to groups of people. And I get that. And everyone, you know, you need to find your comfort zone. But everybody is capable of being storytellers. Everybody is capable of building narratives. And, you know, I love to help people. And when I do that presentation, I've done it a bunch of times, I always tell people, connect to me on LinkedIn. And everyone who's out there listening, connect to me on LinkedIn. I am happy to listen to your stories. I'm happy to work with you. I'm happy to share my experience. And I'm also happy to share my mistakes because thank you for when you did your intro, not calling me an expert. That makes me nuts. I am an experienced practitioner, and all that means I've been doing this a long time. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I would like to be able to share those mistakes with you. You know, I've been in front of audiences and told stories that are too long. Sometimes I distract myself with the sound of my own voice, and then we don't get where we want to go. So, you know, again, you can be the hero, but when we talk about the hero's journey as a security exec, as a, somebody in sourcing, procurement, vendor management, somebody in any facet of risk, you want to start primarily, you want to be the enabler and not necessarily the hero. And truthfully, I think the enabler sleeps better at night than the hero, because the hero always has to be on. They're always under pressure. People are always coming to them. Fix this. Go slay this beast, this dragon, whatever it may be.
Yeah, so I was thinking when you said that the hero, I'm thinking of famous heroes and wise men, the pairings. So Harry Potter would be the CISO, or would be the CFO or the CEO. Mm-hmm. And the CISO would be Professor Dumbledore.
Yep.
And sometimes, you know, Ron is the hero once in a while, you know, or Samwise Gamgee.
Yeah, they throw him a bone every once in a while. Even Ginny got to be the hero once.
Yeah, the two of us, you know, we're like Samwise Gamgee, and you know, once in a while we may get a spinoff. But that's a really good, and remind me to tie in the last question that we have today. About how the story ends into the story of Beowulf. I'm really happy that you brought up that. I just read Beowulf actually, not last weekend, but the previous weekend. No spoilers, but you have to watch the whole episode, and we'll get to the end and see how that ties into cybersecurity. So when we're communicating cybersecurity to senior leadership or boards or customers, partners, what would be the beginning, the middle, and the end of that presentation or that story?
That's a great question. And I'm going to tap dance a little bit because I don't always think there's a 100% correct answer. But what I can tell you is you want to start the story by hooking the audience into something they care about, they understand. So using a board presentation as a model, I always tell people, you should start off with business goals. Go to your About Us page, go to your 10K filings, go look, what are the business objectives? And the pushback we frequently get is, well, they already know what their business goals are. And that is true. But they don't always realize that you do. They don't always think you do. They're still thinking about security leaders as Dr. No, who said no, stop, don't to everything. So I think the starting point, you want to hook your audience. You want to give them something that makes them realize that they need to pay attention. Now, sometimes that requires you to start at the end and work backwards, right? Because if I say, well, our business goal is to increase revenue by 30% and increase customer retention from 85 to 95. Okay, so now I gave you something. Well, how do we do that? Well, first, let's talk about, here we're at the middle, let's talk about what the potential risks are. So what are some of the things that can happen out there that might get in the way of that? Well, we want customer retention to go up. What does that mean? Well, we need to keep our systems up and running. We need to make sure that when somebody calls, the phones are answered. Okay. Well, ransomware is what we're talking about today. If we get hit with ransomware, systems are not up, data is not available, people can't function, people can't work. So now we have this story that says there's this thing called ransomware. We're happy to talk about what that is. You don't need to know the details, but this ransomware thing will have an impact on your ability to support your customers, your ability to deliver product, your ability to deliver services, to raise customer satisfaction, all of which contribute toward hitting those revenue objectives and making sure that we maintain revenue. We know, you know, that it takes more effort to get a new customer than to retain the one you have. I was actually at a conference a couple weeks ago, and one of the speakers said, for every customer you lose to grow, you have to bring in two more. And I think that's a simple story. So that's the story from that perspective, which is we know what's important to you. We are all about that. There are some things that we are aware of that we're going to share with you that you may not be aware of because you have so many other things to worry about. right? So kind of pat them on the back a little bit. And here are some things that we can and should be doing so that we can help manage those risks to within risk tolerance so that you can achieve your goals bigger, better, faster, more. And it's really, it's as simple as that. And I think security people, and I can say this because I've done the job, I think we try to complicate things. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes we have to simplify it so that we can, you know, get it done, you know, in 90 seconds or 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. But you're not getting an hour and a half in front of the board. You're not getting an hour and a half talking to the CEO or the CFO or the COO in the hallway. And I think that we need to have a bunch of different stories on tap. You got a 30-second story, you got a 2-minute story, you got a 10-minute story, all of which are about the same problem, all of which are about the same risk, all of which are about the same solution or sets of solutions. So I'll give you sort of a real world example. So I had a friend of mine who I coached when I was at my previous job, and she ran the IT department for a fairly large, fairly complex retail company. She had developers that worked for her. She had architects that worked for her. She had network people. She had endpoint people. She had customer support. So she had all these different people, and the teams were really, really good. They did a great job. But what they didn't do well was they didn't work together. They all were so focused on their stuff and didn't pay attention to anyone else's stuff. So here was the story that I worked with her on. And this is actually an old parable. It's called The Blind Man and the Elephant. It's an ancient Indian parable. And the story goes like this. A bunch of blind men were placed at different parts of an elephant, and they were asked to touch the elephant and tell the audience what an elephant was. So one of the men was at the leg of the elephant, and he touched it and grabbed it. And he said, an elephant is a tree. And another one was at the tail and, you know, felt the long sinuous tail and said, oh, an elephant is like a rope. And one was at the body of the elephant and said, an elephant is a wall. And one was by the tusk and said, an elephant is a spear. And one was at the trunk and said, an elephant is a serpent. Well, why is that? Because those people were too close, too tight, zoomed in on what was right in front of them. If they all took a step back and started to share what they knew and what was important to them, they would have a bigger picture. So this was the story that we worked with her on. And she told it during one of their weekly meetings, just as kind of an off thing. And then she went to each of the individual teams and started to get them, hey, you know, you might want to talk to Bob. You might want to talk to Mary, because she's got this thing going on that's going to have an impact on you, or that you're going to have an impact on. And over, it took a little while, but over a 2 or 3 month period of time, she began to see those folks work with each other instead of coming to her. They started talking to each other and saying, hey, I'm working on this. How does this impact you? Or I need this. Can you bring this to the table? And it was amazingly successful, all because of a 90-second story that's thousands of years old. And, and I just think there are so many of those. You know, the boy who cried wolf can be used to get your executives to realize there's a lot of stuff going on out there. We're only bringing you a small slice of it because we know it's important. So moral of the story is, if we come to you, it's because it's really important and you should listen. We're not going to come to you with everything. And that's just, you know, another example. And, you know, I'm a big fan. I tell a lot of stories from my career. I've been around for a long time. And I'll let you in on a little bit of a secret. Stories don't always need to be true, as long as they are based in something that helps you get to your point, right? The moral of the story. That's a key phrase. What do we want to achieve? And I think that comes back to something else too. What is it you're trying to achieve by building it and telling a story? I think, people in general have a tendency to pull themselves off topic. So we need to get them focused, and we need to make sure that we are aiming at what's the end game. What is it we're trying to help them understand, learn, change, et cetera.
Yeah. And we know that in the storytelling world, it is difficult to tell a shorter story than to tell a long one. And the more you know your stuff, if you're going to challenge yourself to tell a story and you're going to keep it down to a minute, 30 seconds, you better know your stuff. Hemingway's famous story, I think he wrote the shortest story ever. You know,
I think the original was he was challenged to write a 6-word story, and it was baby shoes for sale, never worn.
Yes.
But you nailed something really, really important, Josh, which is it is much harder to tell a shorter story. Mark Twain has a great quote, which I'm going to butcher a little bit, but the point is there. He said, "You want me to talk for 2 hours? I can do that next week. You want me to talk for 5 minutes? I need 3 months to prepare."
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you got to get it down. And when I was at Gartner, that was a problem that we were confronted with all the time. We were told you got to write a 3-page research note, a 4-page research note with one point. And a lot of people struggled, me included. It took me a while before I was able to realize what's the core here? And then you can do 5 or 6 other things, but you nailed it. The ability to condense it down to the key elements is really, really challenging. And the only way you get there really is by practice and having people who will provide you with real, accurate, honest feedback that you can't take personally.
Right. When we tell stories, a lot at TrustMap during a demo, during a simple presentation. It is easier to give a 1-hour demo than to give a 5-minute demo. And really, if you know your product and you know what you're selling, you really should be able to get it down to 5 minutes, because that means you understand the product and you understand the customer. In the case of the CISO, they understand what it is that their job is from a risk perspective. And when they're delivering this to boards and partners and customers, they know exactly what it is that their customers or their audience really wants. So I think that's another really good point to keep in the back pocket.
So at Black Kite, we have a similar challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are an intelligence provider that supports third-party risk management programs. You know, we're actually quite aligned with what you guys do at TrustMap from different angles. And what we run into sometimes on sales calls, on demos, is sometimes the tendency is to show them everything in the product and they get overwhelmed. Instead of saying, how do you want your story to end? What moral do you want, by asking them? What do you care about? I hate that what keeps you awake at night. But, what is the biggest problem? What is the biggest challenge? And sometimes it's we take too long to onboard third parties. Sometimes it's we send out a questionnaire and then in 3 years we have no idea what's going on. Sometimes it's, we do the tactical things really well, but we don't have good process in place. We don't have maturity, which I know ties back to what you guys are doing at TrustMap. And, on the side that we're looking at, third-party risk, supplier risk, supply chain risk, vendor risk, these are quickly becoming board-level problems. And, there's new regulation. DORA out of the EU has a section on third-party risk. There are regulations in the U.S. with financial services that talk about supply chain risk. And you say financial services, supply chain, but they have information supply chain. They have digital supply chain. And I think we need to start thinking differently about that. But at the end of this, if you don't know your audience, it's very hard to build a good resonant story for them. And, I always say, if you keep taking your significant other to a Marvel movie and they want to go see a romantic comedy, they're going to stop going to the movies with you.
For all my friends who are dating, I'm looking right in the camera. If the girl doesn't want to go see the Marvel movie and wants to go see The Notebook, take her to The Notebook. All right.
There you go. Continue. Yeah. suck it up. And you know what? I've been dragged to plenty of movies that I really, really liked, even though I didn't want to go.
I'm not going to say Oklahoma, but I sat through Oklahoma.
don't get me started. I'm going to start singing the Surrey with the Fringe on top, and nobody wants that.
No.
I can tell a good story. I cannot sing one.
Oh, boy. That's for the next podcast. All right. Before we get to the Beowulf, there are two questions that I really want to get to, and I'm itching to get to the Beowulf question because I love that story. But before we get to that, what role does data play in storytelling these days?
That's an interesting question. And I am a believer that emotions get your audience hooked, and then data supports your story. And I have another presentation I do on 4 tips on how to be a better communicator. And that's actually one that I hit on. And I actually this was a study that was done that I think is a great example. So these researchers, they went out and they stopped a bunch of people in the street and said, "Hey, we'd like you to fill out this survey. We'll give you $5.
Okay.
By the way, we're actually working on behalf of a charity that feeds starving children in Africa. We'd like you to consider donating the $5 honorarium we're giving you to that charity. And they broke the group up into three sections. The first group was given a picture of a starving child. Second group was given a data sheet filled with all kinds of numbers about starving children. And as you can imagine, the people that saw the picture gave more frequently than the people that saw the data. The third group got the picture and the data sheet. Now, you would think that those people would give more, but in fact, they didn't. They gave less than the people with the picture. Why is that? Well, because the data undermined the emotional hook. So I think we can use data, we can use information, we can use intelligence, and to me, those are sort of stack ranked, but we have to be careful about it because our audience will get numb. If you're going to your executives and telling, we have 75 million missing patches, like they don't know what to do with that, right? But if you go to them and say, look, we've built a program around making sure our systems are secure. We're not that good at it. And they say, well, what do you mean we're not that good at it? Then you can start to bring those numbers in. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to contextualize them. So I think data is good. And know your audience, right? If you're in front of the CFO, data is okay for them. If you're in front of a CEO who's going to be by nature a bigger picture, more strategic, the numbers are probably not going to be the best way. And the data is not going to be, I think, the best way to move that. But that was a great question. And I love that because the tendency of technical people is to give technical data. And then you don't know your audience in that case.
Yeah. A friend of mine, Christian Espinoza, speaks a lot about that, talks about emotional intelligence and teaching emotional intelligence to IT and security folks. And I said, my friend, good luck. It's really hard because it's ingrained in us to really talk about data and to tell that story with data. But storytelling with data sometimes is just not storytelling.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are some great quotes around that. So there's one by a gentleman named Carl Buhner, which is frequently attributed to Maya Angelou, although she did not actually say it, which is people remember how you made them feel much more than what you said to them. Right. And I think that's really, really critical. Now, having the data to back up your story, that is super, super helpful and useful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I coach CISOs go in front of the boards, I always tell them 5 slides is good. You could have 25 slides of supporting information and data that you may or may not get to. Mm-hmm. But you gotta get it out there and you gotta hook your audience. That's it. At the end of the day, if you don't hook them, you're out of business. And that's the problem that you run into.
Speaking of storytelling and hooks, the SEC filings. So are you tracking that at all? What is that narrative looking like? How is it shaping up? And how are CISOs addressing the SEC rulings?
So that is, to get into that level of detail, we're going to do another session. But first thing is they have now pushed the date back to October. It was originally supposed to be March, then it was April. Now it's October. I have some thoughts about why that is, and I will share them with you in a second. But I think that the way the SEC structured this, I think, is going to work really well for the most part. There is one problem I have with it, but I think they're saying board members need to be able to articulate the cyber risk management strategy of the organization. That's a story. Here are the risks we've identified. Here are the things that we've implemented to manage those risks. Here's how we're measuring our effectiveness against that. That's a pretty good story, right? The second thing is they need to be able to articulate the material risk to the business because of cybersecurity. Again, very, very simple story. Ransomware is a material risk to our organization. If we get hit with ransomware, we're going to have downtime. We're going to have difficulty recovering. We may have reputational risk. We may have a financial hit. We will have contractual problems because we won't be able to deliver things to our customers, clients that we've committed to. Mm-hmm. And here are the things that we're doing. Third-party risk, supply chain risk is a material risk. Here's why. And we've seen examples. Back in February, Ion UK, options trading organization out of the UK, obviously, they got hit with ransomware. They were down for like 8 days. And as a result, a couple of very large banks, I won't name them because I'm not big on calling people out. They had to shut down part or all of their trading desks at the cost of millions of pounds or euros, right? do you want this to happen to us? I think is a reasonable question. Mm-hmm. So as we start to see those things and we start to be able to build those narratives. Now, if you go to the board and say, ooh, ransomware is going to be the end of us, that's not useful. If you say, there's this thing ransomware, you probably know what it is, because at this point now, I think everyone knows what ransomware is. Ransomware is a risk to us, and here's why, and here's what it means if we don't actually do a good job protecting against ransomware. So that's the piece. Now, the third part of the SEC that I'm still struggling with a little bit is you have to have cyber expertise on the board. They haven't done a great job of defining what that means. And I think what's happening is, I don't see any big company opening up a new board seat for a cyber person, because board seats cost the companies a lot of money, millions of dollars, because stock and comp and travel, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think what's going to happen is I think we're going to see a lot of board members that are going to go take cybersecurity training, which I don't think is enough. Or they're going to bring in CISOs that don't necessarily have the business background. And I think that's
what I'm afraid of
too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we saw a trend for a while where boards were putting cyber people on. And what was happening was two things. The rest of the board was zoning out because they said, Mary, Bob, they got this, right? And the other thing was those board members tended to be younger. They tended to maybe have a little bit of imposter syndrome and not think they belong there. So they would hit the CISO with all kinds of technical questions to show how smart they were. And that's fine, but the rest of the board zones out and you don't really get there. So,
right.
And I think, and I don't know this for sure, I think that may be why they're pushing it back. I think they're probably trying to refine a little bit of that. And I mean, let's face it, Josh, at the end of the day, sometimes people need to be punished before anybody takes this stuff seriously. Yeah. SEC has a great reputation for holding people's feet to the fire. Hopefully it won't happen with this, but we'll see when October comes.
What is the reasoning behind having a cyber expert on the board? Is it to educate the other board members, or is it to have someone who is responsible solely for cybersecurity risk?
So I think it's partially about education, but I think it's also partially having someone that has that deep visibility into strategy, whether it's business strategy, pivoting, whether it's mergers and acquisitions, whether it's looking at market conditions, whether it's looking at going public or not, or going private, whatever. So I think it's the goal there really is to have that person be able to bring the cyber to the table and keep it contextualized within all of the other business objectives. I mean, simply put, and I know this is an oversimplification, but executives and boards care about three things: money coming in, money going out, and if something goes wrong, who's in trouble, right? And I think that is the thing. And if, I mean, if you think about it, I'm actually going through some board prep training, so this is sort of all fresh in mind. But up until 20 years ago, boards didn't even have risk committees on them. But now, if you're in financial services, you are required to have a risk committee. And I think what we might see as a result of this is we're going to see cybersecurity committees. Now, keep in mind, too, because the SEC has such a big impact on the world, well, the United States, and therefore by extension, I think we're going to see a lot of companies that are not publicly traded or not super big who are still going to start looking out to bring some cyber expertise on the board. And then the other thing too, you know, cybersecurity is a narrow slice of the risk pie, but I think in a lot of cases it has an outsized impact. If you get hit with ransomware, maybe you can't pay your bills. You get hit with ransomware, maybe your balance sheet gets all whacked out. You get hit with ransomware or some kind of a breach, and you get hit with a $5 million fine that you did not expect, has an impact on finance, has operational impact. And this is an area where we at Black Kite have started to do a lot more work around, like, what is the financial impact of a breach of a partner of ours, of a vendor of ours? And then we've also started to see ESG, which is environmental, societal, and governance, as a big driver. And there's impact in and out from cybersecurity there as well.
Okay, now we can get to Beowulf, right?
Okay.
Way too excited about this. I'm just going to ask, how does the story end, both for the CISO and for Beowulf?
Oh, so that's a tough one. I think the way it ends for the CISO is they get treated as a trusted business partner and not as someone who gets yelled at when something goes wrong. They get brought in earlier in the decision-making process. They get brought in earlier in the strategic planning process. Why? Because one, they stop saying no to everything. And number two, they help the business understand what their risk exposures are. And I think that we've definitely seen a trend. It's moving slow, but more and more CISOs are now out of IT. More and more CISOs are getting in front of the board on a quarterly basis, or at least in front of the audit committee on a quarterly basis. And I think what the CEOs and their direct reports get is defensibility. We knew this was a risk. It was within our risk appetite. If something happens based on what we know now, we would make that same decision. We would continue to accept that same risk, because if you don't have risk, you don't have a business. Or knowing what we know now, we're going to do something different, and here's the plan of action, right? To steal, you know, federal government nomenclature, the POA, right? Plan of action. What is it we're going to do? So just kind of to step back, I think that the CISO becomes a more trusted advisor. They get involved earlier in decision-making. They get involved earlier in the broader risk discussion. And the CEO, CFO, COO, CRO, whatever, they then have more intelligence and more information to make better decisions and drive their organization, whether it's for profit, whether it's public, whether it's government agency, drive them forward without being exposed to undue levels of risk. And if you read the book by Stanley Gardner, Earl Gardner wrote a book called Grendel, from Grendel's perspective, which I loved. I think I actually like that better than Beowulf, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I haven't read it. I'm going to pick it up. Maybe that'll be my read for this weekend. Well, the book's been out for like, what, 500 years? If you don't know the ending by now, too bad. But
yeah, no spoilers for Beowulf anymore.
Yeah, Beowulf dies. I don't know if the movie, you know, the one with Angelina Jolie, I don't know if that's the way it ended. But in the book, he's the king of the Danes, and he wants to go after this dragon himself. And he doesn't take his men because they're all scared to go with him. And he's not supposed to go. Like, he's the king. But he volunteered to go bravely, and He Beowulf and the dragon slew each other. So he killed the dragon, but he sacrificed himself falling on that sword.
So here's a great lesson. Beowulf, as the king, was should no longer have been the hero.
Right, right.
But he continued to see himself as the hero.
Mm-hmm. And he suffered for it. Because the hero throughout Beowulf before that was the original king of the Danes.
Yes.
And he would sort of call back and forth and, you know, say, I went out here and I helped these guys do this stuff, and I killed Grendel and I brought you all this gold, which was what he's supposed to do, as, you know, so as a CISO, stay in the throne room and be the advisor. This gets really screwed up, because in some stories, the king is the hero. So, okay, we've gone way off track. I was way too excited about Beowulf. Well, that wraps it up. I know you've got to be somewhere in a little bit. And Jeff, thank you for being so gracious with your time. Always a pleasure to talk to you. How can folks reach you if they would like to find you?
Yeah, so you can connect to me on LinkedIn under Jeffrey Wheatman. I am the only one. You can also get me at jeffrey.wheatman@blackkite.com. And I also have a podcast. I'm going to give a little commercial. It is called Risk and Reels. We actually talk about movies. And then if we have time, we usually do, we talk about cybersecurity. I've been around a long time. I have a lot of really cool friends. And we've had some great – we're actually on hiatus for the moment. We are actually starting to record for season 2. Next week, I think. So feel free to reach out. The good news is Jeffrey Wheatman is not a super common name. So easy to find me. You can check us out also at blackkite.com, and you can find me there as well. So Josh, it was a pleasure. I want to thank you for having me. It's great that we have become friends over the last couple months since we met out in Minneapolis. And I'm looking forward to seeing you soon somewhere out on the road.
Oh yeah, soon. It was a pleasure, as always. And everyone, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Business of Security, aka T-Boss. I'm Josh Bruning. You can always find me on LinkedIn, or you can shoot me an email at jbruning trustmap@trustmap.com. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Security podcast brought to you by TrustMap. We want to hear from our listeners. If you have a topic you'd like to discuss on the podcast or would like to continue the conversation, please connect with us on Twitter at @CyberSecPodcast or email us at businessofsecurity@trustsds.com. We want to thank Jeff Wheatman for being our guest today. Our host was Josh Bruning, Cybersecurity Solutions Engineer with TrustMap. You can connect with Josh on LinkedIn and learn more about TrustMap at trustmap.com. Our show is produced by Dan Rollins with Livewire Films. You can find Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about Livewire at livewirefilms.com. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Business of Security podcast. And that's a wrap.